He laid his arm about Joseph's neck and spoke in his ear, which the son bent to his mouth by turning his face aside. "Joseph, once I let you have the coat of many colors, and gave it to you when you begged for it. You know that it did not mean the firstborn and the inheritance."
"I know," answered Joseph, as softly.
"But I meant it so, I suppose, or more or less, in my heart," Jacob said. "For my heart loved you, and will always love you, whether you live or are dead, more than your brothers. But God tore your garment and admonished me with mighty hand, against which is no rebelling. He separated you and sent you away from my house. The branch he took away from the trunk and planted it out in the world. There is only submission left, submission of purpose and deed, for the heart knows not submission. He cannot take my heart from me, or its election, without taking my life. But if this heart neither purposes nor acts according to its love, that is submission. You understand?" Joseph turned his head towards his father and nodded. He saw tears in the old brown eyes, and his own, too, were wet.
"I hear and know," he whispered, and again turned his ear to listen.
"God has given and has taken you," murmured Jacob, "and he has given you back, but yet not quite, for he has kept you too. He did let the blood of the beast count for that of the son. Yet you are not like Isaac, a saved sacrifice. You have spoken of the fullness of his thought and the high double meaning of his counsel, and you have spoken wisely. For wisdom is his, but shrewdness is man's, to think himself carefully into the knowledge of wisdom. He has elevated and rejected you both in one. I say it in your ear, beloved child, and you are wise enough to be able to hear it. He has raised you above your brothers, just as in your dream, and I have, my darling, ever held your dreams in my heart. But he has raised you in a worldly way, not in the sense of salvation and the inheritance of the blessing. You know that."
"I hear and know," repeated Joseph, as for a moment he took his ear away and turned his whispering mouth instead.
"You are blessed, my dear one," went on Jacob, "blessed from the heavens above downward, and from the depths that lie beneath, blessed with blitheness and with destiny, with wit and with dreams. Still, it is a worldly blessing, not a spiritual one. Have you ever heard the voice of self-denying love? Then you hear it now in your ear, in all submissiveness. God, too, loves you, child, though at the same time he denies you the inheritance, and has punished me because secretly I wanted you to have it. The firstborn you are in earthly things, and a benefactor, as to strangers, so to your own. But through you, salvation is not to reach the peoples, and leadership is denied you. You know it?"
"I know," answered Joseph.
"It is well," said Jacob. "It is well to look at fate with cheerful, admiring eyes, one's own as well. But I will do as did God, who granted to you in denying to you. You are the set apart, severed from your stem. You are and shall be no stem, but I will exalt you in the father rank, so that your sons, the firstborn, shall be as my sons. Those you are still to get shall be yours, but these mine, for I will take them as sons. You are not like the fathers, my child, for you are no spiritual prince, but a worldly one. Yet you shall sit at my side, at the side of the progenitor, as a father of tribes. Are you content? I thank you as low as your feet, answered Joseph softly, as once more he turned his ear away and put his mouth to Jacob's ear. Then Israel loosed him from his embrace. The reception. The bystanders, Joseph's train at a distance on one side and the Jacob people on the other, had respectfully looked on at the intimate converse between the two. Now they saw that it was over and that Pharaoh's friend was inviting his father to drive on. He turned towards the brothers and went to greet them. They on their side hastened to greet him, and all bowed before him, and he took to his heart Benjamin, his mother's son. "Now I will see your wives and children, Turturah," he said to the little man. "The wives and children of all of you I will see and get acquainted with. You must present them before the father and me, and I will sit at his side. I have had a tent set up nearby to receive you. It was there my brother Judah found me, and I came hither from there. Take our father again and carry him, and mount all of you and follow me. I will go ahead in my car, but if one of you will drive with me, for instance, Judah, who was so kind as to come and meet me, there is room enough for us both and the driver. Judah, it is you whom I invite. Will you come with me?" And Judah thanked him and mounted into the car that Joseph beckoned up. He drove in the car of the Exalted One and stood with him in the gilded basket of the car with the prancing steeds in front with their gay feathers and purple leather harness. Joseph's people followed, and then the children of Israel. At their head, Jacob in his swaying sedan. The people from the marketplace of Pacos ran alongside, for they were eager to see all that went on. So they came to a fine and spacious tent, gaily painted and carpeted, with servants inside. Along the walls were garlanded wine jugs in reed holders. There were cushions and mats, drinking vessels and water basins, and all sorts of cakes and fruits. Joseph ushered his father and brothers inside, welcomed them again, and offered them refreshments, assisted by his steward, Mysakme, who was already known to the brothers. They were all very merry. He drank with them from golden beakers, into which servants strained the wine. Afterwards he sat down with Jacob, his father, on two camp stools at the door of the tent, and Jacob's wives, daughters, and sons, and the wives of his sons, passed before him. That is to say, the wives of Joseph's brothers and their children. In short, Israel, that he might see them and make their acquaintance. Reuben, his eldest brother, named their names, and he spoke cordially to them all. But Jacob was recalling another such scene out of the depth of the past, the day after the night of the wrestling at Peniel, when he presented his family to Esau, the hairy one. The maids first with their children, then Leah with her six, and last Rachel, together with him who now sat beside him, whose head had been so lifted up in the world. "They are 70. He said proudly to Joseph. His son did not ask whether he meant 70 with or without Jacob, and with or without himself. He did not ask for a count, just looked blithely at them as they walked before him, drew Benjamin's youngest sons, Muppim and Rosh, to his knee to stand beside him, and was most interested and pleased when Sarah, Asher's child, was set before him, and he learned that it was she who had first sung to Jacob the news that Joseph was alive. He thanked the little maid, and said as soon as possible, as soon as he had time, she must sing the song to him, too, upon her eight strings, so that he might hear it. Among the brothers' wives, Tamar passed over with her two sons from Judah. Reuben, naming their names, forbore to tell her story. It was too long, and would have to go over to a more suitable time. Tall and dark, Tamar strode past, Hassan on either hand, and bowed haughtily to the shadow dispenser. For to herself she was saying, "I am in the line of descent, and you are not, no matter how much you glitter." When they had all been introduced, the wives and the sons of the daughters and the daughters of the wives were all served to refreshments in the tent. But Joseph gathered the heads of houses about him and his father, and with worldly foresight and circumspection instructed them in the details of his arrangements. "You are now in the land of Goshen, Pharaoh's beautiful pasture land," he said, "and I will so arrange that you will stay here, where things are still not too Egyptian, and you shall live here as Gerim, free-footed and at will, as you did in Canaan. Graze your flocks only on these meadows. Build huts and sustain yourselves. Father, for you I have already set up a house, carefully copied from yours at Mamre, so that you may find everything as you are used to it, a little distance from here, nearer the marketplace of Pakos, for it is best to live in the country, but yet not too far from a town. So did our fathers do. They lived under trees, and not between walls, but near to Beersheba and Hebron. At Pakos, Per Sopt, and Per Bastet, on this branch of the Nile, you can market your wares. It will be pleasing to Pharaoh, my master, that you graze, trade, and transact your business, for I will petition his majesty for an audience, and speak before him about you. I will tell him that you are in Goshen, and your staying here is clearly desirable, since you have always been shepherds of sheep and goats, as were your fathers before you. I must explain to you that keepers of sheep have always been looked at a little askance by the children of Egypt, not so much as swineherds, not that, but they have a slight distaste, which you must not mind. On the contrary, we must take advantage of it, so that you can stay here somewhat apart from the Egyptians, for shepherds belong in the land of Goshen. After all, Pharaoh's flocks graze here, the gods own sheep and goats. So, as you brothers are experienced shepherds and breeders, it is a natural thought, and I will suggest it to his majesty so that he comes upon it by himself, as it were, that he should appoint you or some of you as overseers over his flocks. He is very charming and easy to get on with, and you know he has already given orders that I introduce some of you, a few of you, for the whole family would be too many, before him, so he can ask you questions and you can answer. But when he asks about your living and your occupation, you will know that that is just for form's sake, and that he already knows from me what you do, and I have already hinted at the idea of putting you over his flocks. That will be the idea behind his formal question. So you must back up what I have told him, saying, 'Your servants are people having to do with flocks from our youth up, and our fathers before us.' Then he will arrange that your abode shall be Goshen, the lowland region, and then he will come on the idea that I shall do well to set the most capable of you over his flocks. Which of you it shall be, you must decide amongst yourselves, or perhaps our father and dear Lord will decide. When all this has been seen to, I will also arrange a private audience for you, my dear father, with the Son of the God, for it is fitting he should see you in all the dignity and weightiness of your God stories, and you should see him who is so tenderly concerned, and very much on the right way, if not quite the right one for the way. He has himself already commanded in a letter to me that he will see and talk to you. I cannot say how much I look forward to presenting you to him, that he may behold Abram's grandson, the man of the blessing, in all his solemn greatness. He already knows something about you, for instance, the story of the peeled wands, but when you stand before him, you will for my sake remember that I have a position among the children of Egypt, and you will not criticize these children before Pharaoh their king because of the way their customs appear to you, for that would be a mistake." "Certainly not. Have no fear, my lord's son and dear child," answered Jacob. "Your old father knows how to have consideration before the greatness of the world, for it, too, is from God. Our thanks for the house and dwelling you have made ready in the land of Goshen. Thither will Israel now go and muse upon all this, to embody it into his tales." Israel stands before Pharaoh. With amazement, we note that this story nears its end. Who would have thought that it would ever be finished, or the well run dry? The truth is, it is ending just as little as it ever began. It is only that it cannot go on forever. At some point, it must make its adieu, and the lips of the teller must close. It must, in all common sense, set a limit to itself, since end it has none. Faced by the infinite, it is the part of reason to yield. Indeed, it is proverbial that the more reasonable party always does. The story, then, despite certain previously made statements about its immoderate character, does preserve a sound sense of proportion, and hence begins to fix its eye on its last little hour, just as Jacob did when the 17 years he had still to live were coming to an end, and he set about putting his house in order. 17 years. That is the limit which is likewise fixed for our story. Or rather, the story fixes for itself by reason of its innate sense of proportion. Never in its most expansive days did it contemplate living longer than Jacob did, or at least only so much longer as would take to recount his death. Its proportions in space and time are patriarchal enough already. Old and satiated with life, satisfied that there should be a limit to all things, it will then set its feet together and be still. But as long as it lasts, it will not falter or tire, but fill out its time and sturdily record what everybody already knows, that Joseph kept his word and brought before Pharaoh's face a group of his brothers, 5 in number. After that, he formally presented Jacob, his father, to the lovely son of Aton, and the patriarch conducted himself with great dignity, if by worldly standards a thought too condescendingly. Of that anon. Joseph himself personally asked for the audience with the Lord of the Breath of Sweetness, and it is worthwhile to notice how familiar tradition shows itself with the usage concerning the conceptions up and down. One went down to Egypt. The children of Israel had come down to Goshen's meadows. But if you went down farther in the same direction, you went up, that is to say, upstream towards Upper Egypt. And the story says quite correctly that Joseph betook himself up to Akhetaton, the city of the horizon in the Hair district, the only capital of the land, to show Hor in the palace that the brothers and the family of his father had come to him, and to suggest that one could not do a cleverer thing than to set these experienced shepherds over the royal flocks in the land of Goshen. Pharaoh took pleasure in the thought which had come to him, and when the 5 brothers stood before him, he talked of it to them, and appointed them for his shepherds. This happened not many days after Israel's arrival in Egypt, as soon as Pharaoh next visited On, his beloved city, and gleamed in the horizon of his palace, as he had done when Joseph was first brought before him to interpret his dreams. This little pause had been made for Jacob's sake, the man of many days, that he need not have a long journey to Pharaoh's seat. At this time he was in Joseph's house at Menphe, together with the 5 selected brothers, the 2 sons of Leah, Reuben and Judah, 1 of Bilhah, Naphtali, 1 of Zilpah's, Gadiel, and Benoni Benjamin, Rachel's son. They had come up with their father to the city of the Swaddled One on the west bank, and were at the house of their exalted brother. There, Asenath the maid greeted the father of her abductor, and the Egyptian grandsons were brought before him, that he might try them and bless them. The old man was deeply moved. "The Lord's kindness is overpowering," said he. "He has let me to see your face, my son, which I had not thought to see. And lo, God has showed me also your seed."